I'm Alexander Heffner, your host on The Open Mind. I'm delighted to welcome our guest today, who is the man behind Romano's Stromboli in Essington, Pennsylvania. It is a pleasure to welcome you, Peter Romano. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Alexander. It's a pleasure to be here.
You have such a storied history of the Stromboli and of American culinary achievement stretching over decades, over generations. You are based in Essington, just a little bit out on the outskirts of Philadelphia. Can you tell us about the founding of Romano's Stromboli?
Sure. So Romano's was founded by my grandfather. His name was Nazareno Romano. He was an Italian immigrant, came to this country in 1922. Actually, as a political refugee, he was trying to escape Mussolini's Italy and came to this country as a stonemason. But in the mid-30s, began dabbing in the food business during the Depression to try to feed his family. And he began selling what became known as South Philly tomato pie out of a wagon cart on along Washington Avenue in South Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He had a relative who owned a bakery on the corner of 20th and Siegel called the Boston Bakery. We knew him as Big Unc. And Grandpa used to make the pies in his home, which was about a half a block away, cart them up to the bakery, bake them. And then with my aunt Cecilia and my father, who was about 7 or 8 at the time, would pull the cart down the street, yelling, pizzola, pizzola, 10 cents a slice. And then in 1944, Grandpa made a move to Essington, Pennsylvania, and he opened up a little shop about 2 doors off of what at that time was called the 76 line or the Hog Island Trolley line. And the shop was called the Essington Pizzeria, and the featured sandwich was tomato pie. Operated that from December of 1944. And then around about late 1949, December, January into 1950, Grandpa was experimenting with some Italian bread dough. By that time, there was a sandwich in the Philadelphia area that was becoming very popular. They ended up calling it the hoagie. And the story behind that was that the shipyard workers, the Italian shipyard workers that were working along the Delaware River, were coming to work with these huge sandwiches on Italian bread rolls. They were coming on the Hog Island line to get to work. They started to call those guys hoggies. And then the sandwich they were having for their meals was called a hoagie. Grandpa took some of the hoagie meats at that time, his originals, which were hot, sweet, and pepperoni. He had guttagino, capicola, and boiled ham, along with cheese and the roasted bell peppers. And he wrapped them with this bread dough, and they resemble, I guess you would say, a small log, and started selling them on the counter of this little store, this Essington Pizzeria, and without a name. Now, I'm told by family that at that time, there was an Italian slang. This item was being made that probably goes back centuries and centuries. The Italian slang for it was imbottito or imbottita. And it's a slang word for stuffed bread. At any rate, he had sold it for about a month or two. And a gentleman by the name of William Schofield, who years later became my Uncle Bill, was in the shop and was teasing that. Grandpa couldn't speak English very much and wanted to know what he had there. And Grandpa said, it's something that I made up, you know, and he was selling it in slices. And Uncle Bill said, well, what's it called? And he says, I don't have a name. He said, we got to call it something. And Grandpa says, well, you name it. At that time, there was a huge scandal. Ingrid Bergman, the actress, and Roberto Rossellini, director, had collaborated on making an old black and white film on the Isle of Stromboli. The movie was called Stromboli. the two of them, even though they were married to other people and had children, became involved in a romantic love affair and conceived a child. And that was world news at that time. Big news. Mrs. Bergman actually ended up being censored by the United States Senate. Did not return to the United States till 1956. Tells you something about Uncle Bill, because off the top of his head, he says, why don't you call it Stromboli? And the name stuck.
So not only do you have the personal history, this is a landmark in American entertainment and culinary lore, which is truly amazing. And this intersects, Peter, over three generations of your family, right?
That's correct, Alexander. We've actually had four generations of Romanos working in the business, but I encourage my children to go to college and seek a career elsewhere. It's a very difficult business.
And this is most challenging in this precarious and once in a century pandemic. Your forefathers and family had the challenge of establishing as political refugees and immigrants and the economic barrier to mobility. But now we have an unprecedented public health crisis. And I know that's something you've grappled with both personally and for the future of your business. Can you describe whether there was anything in the Romano history to address the onslaught of changes from these recent months?
Well, I think the legacy of my grandfather, certainly making something out of nothing. There's a spirit to that. He actually, I told you that the Stromboli sandwich started in 1950. In 1952, Grandpa bought a piece of property about two blocks down from that Essington pizzeria, and it was in an empty lot. And Grandpa was a trained stonemason by trade, and he GC'd the construction of what became known as Romano's, that opened up in 1954, and also built a duplex next to it, which he lived in one of the units. So, you know, as a young child growing up, of course, in those days, Alexander, everything, you made everything by hand. You knew it was a tough life. I can remember what made it go in those early days was Westinghouse. Westinghouse was a huge employer. There was like 14,000 or 15,000 people working there. The lunches were unbelievable. In the 40s and 50s, you didn't see a lot of people going out to dinner that much. Everybody had three square meals at home. But the lunches, there used to be a line waiting to get in at that time. And then I think that the next big thing I saw was when Westinghouse closed. And I think that you knew the end was coming in the late 70s, but by I think about 84, 85, it shut down completely. And by this time, you know, my grandfather had passed in 63, and Dad had the business. There was a question of what to do. Luckily, by that time, I-95 had come through that area. It's only about four blocks from the restaurant. And the airport, the Philadelphia airport, really started to boom. There was expansion going on constantly. And with the airport expansion came hotels. So now we have 32 major hotels within 3 miles of our business. So this all developed starting in the 70s and on through till even today. So it became, and then there was Boeing. And Boeing was what became a big employer during the Vietnam War. So, this expansion of the airport and the other things that went with it and the highway coming through helped Dad survive and took the place of what was lost by Westinghouse exit. So I got to tell you, I mean, my father, it's a tough one to live up to. He's a very hard worker, always worked since he was a little boy. All he ever knew was work. He's still at 89. He still lives in the apartment connected to the restaurant. And he's my first line of defense if anything goes wrong. And most of the sauces, you know, whether it's the bolognese or the veal scallopine or the marinara, whatever it is, when I'm making stuff, he's usually in the office and I bring a little cup in. I want him to taste everything I do, you know, the clam sauces, all that kind of stuff, just as a check against myself. But my father really, he's special.
And you and your family embody resilience. With other economic downturns in past decades, you couldn't necessarily be responsive by integrating in your shop the kind of measures that would help. In the case of a pandemic that has induced economic harm and hardship, you've undertaken the labor to install new ventilation, new systems within your restaurant to be safe and to be able to continue to produce in a way that can preserve the bottom line, if not continue to grow the business and keep people healthy. So I would imagine that is a difference between other downturns in the sense that now, amid the pandemic, there's actually the opportunity to retrofit, if you will, or renovate to make the business run smoothly again.
Yes. You know, I would say for anybody who's in business like ours or any business, truly for immigrants to come to this country or in America in general, the American dream really is, I think, best personified in the opportunity that America gives people to be in business for themselves. And, you know, there, I don't think there's any other place in the world like it where you can go from nothing and make whatever you want by hard work and your own, the sweat of your brow and how intelligent you are and how much you're willing to commit. But I want to say to anybody that's struggling, if it's at all possible, never, ever give up on your dreams. Never stop trying. Never quit. I think never quitting is one of the things that you must have to survive, because there's just going to be too many opportunities to quit. I know in 2015, we had a situation which you just referenced about the restaurant really hadn't been renovated since 1977. And we had a situation develop with our exhaust systems and all this stuff. It was in need of replacement. And there was a real question about whether or not we were going to do it. And money is always tight. And I didn't know. You know, I didn't know. My dad was against it. He wanted to shut it down. But I went ahead and invested about $130,000 and did the renovations. And you just don't know, Alexander, what's going to happen. I reopened the business in March of 2015. And in September of 2015, the Travel Channel was filming in my restaurant. They were doing a special on iconic foods of Philadelphia, and they wanted to see the place where the Stromboli sandwich got its start. It, you know, you just don't know how things are going to turn in life, but you have to believe. But yeah, you know, with the pandemic, you know, when it first happened and we lost the use of our dining room, those first couple weeks were very scary, you know, very scary, and not knowing what to do. I had to make a decision for my staff. I lost 2/3 of my staff, not because I let anybody go, but some of them were young people. Parents didn't want them working in that situation. There were delivery drivers that didn't want to go to the hotels. So there were a lot of different things happening. And, I had to supplement the wages that I was giving my help, because I knew, especially for the waitresses, that they weren't going to be able to get the tips without the dining room. You know, since about 07, I had really been working on our internet presence. I can remember my dad scolding me for wasting my time playing on the computer in the office. And I tried to make him understand that I was working, but he didn't believe it at the time. One of the things we did come up with, which you had said, I had a website built. I had a lot to learn, Alexander. I didn't come to it with any prior knowledge. Today we have a website for our brick and mortar business, the restaurant business, and we also have a website for our shipping business, the restaurants, romanostromboli.com, and the shipping site is weship.com. I think that what the pandemic has shown me is that the internet's going to play a very vital role because of who we are, because of what my grandfather started, because of the Stromboli sandwich, and where we go in the future. And last summer, we were fortunate enough to partner up with a company called Gold Belly, and we sell on their site too. They do famous foods, and they ship them all over the country, and been a tremendous thing for us to learn from and to interact with. So we're still doing those other things, Alexander, but you're still doing, you know, dine in, take out, delivery, but this shipping is, I used to call the business, it was like a three-legged stool. The shipping business has added a fourth leg to that stool.
And you can order Romano's online and on the websites that Peter mentioned. And of course you've got your traditional, like he was saying, with pepperoni peppers, but you can get virtually anything, steak, like the cheesesteak style. If you like buffalo chicken, there's a wide variety. Let me ask you specifically about the invention of the Stromboli relative to what you hear, what you see in your normal pizzeria, the chicken roll. And you also have buffalo chicken parm. But you hear, you have the calzone, you've got the roll, which is sort of like the Stromboli, but not exactly what you invented. For those who are less familiar with making the distinctions between a chicken roll, calzone, and then the original Stromboli, what are some of the technical differences in the way that it's made?
Thank you. Yes. So Grandpa, most of the pizza places that sell an item that they call Stromboli wanted to capitalize on what my grandfather created by the name, but they really weren't interested in the item itself and duplicating it. Most of these places were pizza shops. While we're more on the lower end family style eating, you know, we don't serve alcohol, though we're a BYOB. We are a restaurant. We have seating for about 65 people, and we've always been a restaurant. But to your point, they took what they had on hand, Alexander. They had most of these places all had pizza dough that they kept in a retarder, usually in the refrigerator after they mixed the dough. They would take that pizza dough, which I would describe as a very soft dough. It's not bread dough. And they would take that item, just like they would take a pizza, and then they would throw ingredients into it, and some would just fold it over like a half pizza, or some would try to roll it into a Stromboli, and they would apply heat to it. They would sometimes, I've heard that some people deep fry them in a fryer, some people bake them. What my grandfather was trying to do was, he was trying to make Italian bread with the ingredients baked inside. So you can go to a pizza shop and wait 10 minutes or 15 minutes while they make their version of Stromboli, and you're going to get warm pizza dough. You're not going to get bread. It takes us about 7 to 8 hours each day to make what I would call a batch of Strombolis. We don't make Strombolis one at a time. You can't. A bakery does not make bread one roll at a time. They make them in batches. I usually do about 200 to 300 to a batch, and I spend all day doing it. It's truly, when it's done right, it's bread. It's Italian bread. And our customers that have been loyal to us all these years, they know the difference. And I tell you, the item, it goes through four different proofing stages, Alexander. And I've talked to chefs both inside and outside the store. And when I tell them that, they can't believe it. They said, there's no way that the dough will hold up for four proofs. But I'm telling you, my family's been doing it for 70 years. And that's the protocol that we use. It's got four stages that it goes through. And when the final one hits, Alexander, you must bake it into bread. There's nothing else you can do with it. It's got to be baked. So if I do 200 strombolis, I'm going to par bake all 200 of those strombolis. Now, what do you do with them? So what we do with it is we freeze them. We freeze them. And that's what makes it such a perfect item to ship around the country. And we've been handling that product that way since 1950. It's the only way to get real bread and then still be able to use it. Interesting, huh?
Absolutely. Very interesting. With respect to any mechanical changes inside the restaurant, for those listening who are in the process of updating their ventilation system or any of their cooking kitchen hardware in the midst of the pandemic, you recently installed, you said, new pods in your restaurant. What are any of the transformations that you've undergone in these past months within the facility itself?
Oh, boy. Yeah, another plus of, you know, what a crazy year this has been. I think in May, June, I had to replace my HVAC system. 7.5-ton air conditioner had to be replaced. I had to replace my baking ovens in September. Those two expenditures were well over $35,000. I replaced all the refrigeration. I have made some adjustments in the way that my father and my grandfather made stromboli. I started using an actual proof box. They didn't used to use a proof box. They used to turn the whole kitchen into a proof box, Alexander. They'd get the strombolis on trays as high as they could and let them proof that way, which made it really comfortable working in the kitchen. I've also added a sheeter to the protocol of how we're putting them together, which has helped. The big thing, Alexander, is labor. Labor. The labor situation, I'm sure that my fellow restaurant owners and business owners would say the same thing. We're in a crisis in this country for labor. And it's hard to get help. I have good help. I have great people working for me. It's just hard to get enough of them. So I had taken a couple of these little steps. The sheeter was one of them because I couldn't find people to take the positions. I've also just replaced my POS order entry system. I've been seeking systems integration for about 2 or 3 years now. And I just went on with a company, and I added kiosks to my counter. Not to get rid of any of my help. I'm still looking for help, but to try to help me get through those times when I don't have enough people out front to give the customers the option to do their own ordering and allow print right to the kitchen. I've also integrated my online ordering, and I used to have a whole crew of drivers. I have only a couple left. I'm now taking on online ordering delivery apps. And when I'm done, I'll have five of them. I have three at the moment, and I'm integrating all of that, total integrated, to my POS system, so that when people order online, either through our own online ordering system or through another service, and you know most of the names, it's going to print right to my kitchen. I also have added the ability to order from the table from your iPhone. Another big thing was several of my children are teachers. And when the pandemic hit in March, my daughter, Danielle, who teaches in the Garden Valley School District nearby. She teaches autistic children. She had a lot of people that worked in the school district and fellow teaching professionals that wanted to help. And they were going to my website. And unfortunately, I had an icon on the website that said gift card, but it didn't work. Well, since then, I've now found a way to have a gift card program that's totally integrated across all my platforms, not only my brick and mortar business, but also both of my websites. So you can go online and buy a gift card from us. And if you're in Chicago, and you can send it to your cousin in New York, and they can go online and use it and buy Stromboli's and have them shipped to Texas if they want. I mean, the systems integration I see as a very strategic key going forward.
You describe the challenge with labor right now. When it comes to thinking about how the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and the United States can adopt policies with the new administration taking office that are going to be helpful to business owners and to your labor, not in the short term, but the longer term of getting through this pandemic. Are there suggestions you have for how that labor situation you described can be rectified either on the state level or perhaps on the federal level?
I don't know if it's possible to create incentives for young people to take positions on like the kind I offer. You know, whether it would be subsidized in education or something. When you're this small, Alexander, I mean, you know, it's not like I'm, you know, McDonald's or something. There's not really a whole lot a business can take on with my revenue stream in terms of outlays. I think the government is looking at some things. I've seen talk about a $15 an hour minimum wage coming. I would hope that that would be tiered. I would hope that it's obviously probably going to involve, for wait staff, a tip credit issue. I'm sure you're familiar with how that works. It's a salary plus tips that would equal at least whatever that wage was, if it was $15 an hour or whatever. But also that it would be something that, for certain age groups, they'd be able to take jobs at something less than $15 an hour, because I don't know that businesses like mine could survive if we had to do a start wage of $15 an hour across the board for everybody we hired. I don't know. The other thing about Alexander is that you know, you have to realize too that we're competing with a lot of businesses that really are operating in a way that I would call less compliant than total compliance with the state and federal governments, if you understand what I'm saying.
Right. Less compliant in what respects?
In cash to people.
Right.
There are people that are using illegal immigrants, and I'm not against people trying to make money to live. I'm just saying that, you know, but that cash, you know, those small shops, and there's a lot of them that, you know, they basically are phantoms, or maybe the only income they're reporting is what the owner makes, or maybe one people, maybe the other 10 or 15 people are all being paid cash. You know, that's a tough thing to compete with.
There's also the non-compliance in the sense of conglomerates that aren't paying the taxes that everybody else ought to and has to.
That's an interesting thing too. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Peter Romano of the famous Stromboli, Romano Stromboli, thank you so much for your story and your insight today.
Thank you, Alexander. It really has been a pleasure talking to you.